Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Anna Hastert.
You're tuned into yet another episode of Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. I'm Anna Hastert, your host this week, reporting live from the Iowa Cattle Industry Leadership Summit. It's been a busy week here at the network. Dustin Hoffman started off the week attending the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation's annual convention, where Governor Reynolds signed an executive order decreeing that all Iowa diesel vehicles purchased from this date forward will be capable of using B20 blended biodiesel. We'll have comments from Governor Reynolds later in this program. Then Dustin made his way to Ames for the Integrated Crop Management Conference. And finally, I wrapped up the week at the Iowa Cattle Industry Leadership Conference, where I spoke to Matt Deppe, CEO of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association, speaking to the year-end review and what cattle producers have to look forward to in 2020. Matt Deppe talks about 2019 being a unique year for Iowa cattle producers. Matt, let's look back on 2019. What kind of year was it for Iowa cattle producers?
A really unique year. When we look at the livestock market, we went into that year pretty strong. We had a fairly strong April and May from a price standpoint. Kind of managed through the summer, and then we have the challenges that we've seen for the last 2 to 3 months when it comes to price point and putting a differential on that compared to the expenses that went in there. From an organizational standpoint, we look at the trade piece, really confused as to why politics are playing such a strong barrier in easy decisions and in easy and long-term discussions like USMCA. We've got our work cut out for us moving forward, regardless of what political office is holding things up. Membership-wise, though, we've had a lot of time face-to-face, in the car, on the phone, a lot of different ways to communicate back and forth with membership. And, you know, we're farmer feeders, too, and so this current crop side of the fence piece, and especially harvest, has been somewhat of a challenge. But overall, there have been some challenging weather and other issues. There have been a few bright spots, especially as we led into the year, and we're certainly hopeful as we trend into 2020 and believe that there's some opportunities coming.
Yeah, and you mentioned trade as an issue that needs to be addressed here soon, but what are some other issues that need to be addressed or resolved in order to make Iowa cattle producers not only more productive but also more profitable?
Well, I tell you what, our guys and gals just want a fair shake. And a lot of times the economics of a fair shake come to play too. And so as we've had many different dialogues throughout the year, and especially this fall, price discovery and transparent fed cattle markets are really, really a high priority topic. And we'll talk about that a little bit this afternoon when we set policy positions and think about what are we going to do moving forward based on what our producers need here in the state and the industry needs. And along with that, negotiated trade, mandatory price reporting, cattle market pieces. You know, kind of that difference in parallel between, you know, innovation and destruction, right? A lot of different topics that connect there. And we're living in a world that just keeps getting more and more technology independent and data-driven, so to speak. And so that affects a lot of our topics. One big topic that we continue to talk about with our membership, try to inform our membership, as well as eventually set some position policy from now again, is traceability, animal disease traceability. Our state, from a livestock production standpoint, or even take it one step further in a meat production standpoint, is so dependent not only agriculture but livestock production from an economic driver perspective. And we have some type of foreign animal disease that comes into the United States that hits Iowa. We've got to be ready to respond to that. Obviously, we've got to be ready right off the bat to keep it out, so to speak, and protect what we have.
And let's talk about some of those things that producers can look forward to as we head into a new year.
Yeah, you know, as we look into 2020 and come after out of this current piece, we do know that Holcomb plant is going to be up and operational. That should initially provide a little bit of fed cattle demand. We certainly hope that that's the case. But certainly as we move forward with that, I think it's really important if we watch and provide some risk management and connect with those folks that can help us understand that better, I think that'll be a big success factor moving in and through 2020. On the state level, we certainly see a tie between water quality as well as livestock and specific grazing cattle production. So things like cover crops and how do you make an economic opportunity out of that, but also provide some water quality by utilizing that in your farmer feeder cropping systems as well. So overall, I think there are some bright spots ahead. It's been a challenging fall more than not. Policy-wise, as members or non-members, they can definitely be reassured that Iowa Cattlemen's Association has got their back and has our ear to the ground to make sure that we know what we need and how we need to get it done.
Yeah, and let's just remind our listeners here real quick what Iowa Cattlemen's Association does for Iowa cattle producers.
So the association is a membership-driven, membership-invested association. We've got over 8,500 members across the state. Most of those members would be production, producer-type members, the families that not only support their family table, but their local communities and overall the economic impact of our state. What we focus on is making sure that there's clarity in law and rule, that they even individually, and they got to focus on their production operations, have that opportunity to get to the table and make sure that we can influence things in a proactive manner rather than being defensive, which is what we see from time to time.
All right, Matt, that's all the questions I had for you today. Anything else you'd like to add?
Just encourage folks to give us a call at Cattlemen's Association if they ever have anything they need connected to their beef business, individually or locally or even from a state standpoint. We're here to serve, and we're at Iowa Beef Businesses beck and call.
That was Matt Deppe, Chief Executive Officer of the Iowa Cattlemen's Association. Stay tuned for more news and information.
Crop specialists at your local FS company know agronomy, soil types, and genetics. We're also dedicated to your success. So in the end, we're more than crop specialists. We're do-whatever-it-takes specialists. We're walk-a-mile-in-your-boots specialists. We're let's-do-this-thing specialists.
FS Envision and FS High Soy are bringing success in Iowa yield trials near you. Talk to your FS crop specialist.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
This past week, the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation had their 2019 annual convention here in Des Moines. During the luncheon on Tuesday, Governor Kim Reynolds addressed the Farm Bureau and also signed her executive order mandating that all Iowa State vehicles requiring diesel engines will run B20 from here on out. We listened to her address to the Farm Bureau.
Thank you, Craig, for that very kind introduction. And let me start by saying thank you for your leadership at Farm Bureau. I've appreciated working with you on many significant issues, from trade to waters of the U.S. to water quality to the RFS and our next generation of farmers. You and your team at the state level, together with the Farm Bureau staff at the county level and the hundreds of members throughout the state, are impactful and true champions of Iowa agriculture and our rural communities. So again, to each and every one of you, thank you. I also want to add my congratulations to the Century County Farm Bureaus and Outstanding Farm Bureau Award winners being honored today. It's a recognition that's truly, truly deserved and integral of our storied history in agriculture. And thank you for the invitation to be part of the Iowa Farm Bureau annual meeting, especially as we celebrate the dawn of Farm Bureau's next century, year one. Built upon a strong legacy of advocacy and rooted in Iowa's rich agriculture heritage, the next 100 years is a new frontier for this organization that's so vital to Iowa producers, and I'm extremely proud and grateful to be a part of it. There's no doubt that as we stand at the threshold of this new era facing real challenges, 2019 has been one for the record books, a crop year that began with historic flooding and is ending with some of the most challenging harvest conditions in recent memory. Trade disputes that magnify the volatility of the commodity market and the ongoing battle to bring our homegrown biofuels to their rightful place at the pump for American consumers. Pick up any one of the stacks of ag publications from the kitchen counter or tune in to your favorite farm broadcaster over the noon hour. There's speculation and forecast for the future at every turn. It's exactly why this moment is so critical, because solving the problems of the next 100 years requires us to think differently today. It's up to us to shape the challenges of uncertainty into opportunities for growth, and that means continued diversification, innovation, and, of course, collaboration. And that's exactly what the focus of this meeting's breakout sessions are centered upon. The time is now to come together and make sure that the voices of our farmers and cutting-edge agribusinesses are heard, and thanks to the Iowa Farm Bureau and the relationships we've formed together, we're turning up the volume on agriculture, not only in Iowa, but across America and around the globe. Every opportunity we have to forge relationships face-to-face is invaluable, and it continues to be a top priority of mine. It was an honor for me to lead the recent trade mission to Japan, and every experience showcased the power of long-term partnerships. Ag was very well represented with a strong delegation, including President Craig Hill, Farm Bureau District 7 Director Rick Plowman, along with Secretary Naig, key commodity groups, and producers. A fun part of the trip was seeing displays of Iowa premium beef in supermarkets in Tokyo and sharing samples with customers in Yamanashi Prefecture, which is a sister state that we will be celebrating 60 years next year. And I can tell you, not only are Japanese consumers hungry for our products, we talked a lot about leaner beef, but they appreciate that Iowa's brand is second to none in terms of safe, reliable, quality products. And our timing could not have been better. While there, the U.S. and Japan trade agreement was being considered by Japan's Diet, which is their version of Congress. It's passed through the lower chamber, and it's anticipated to pass through the upper prior to December 9th. Upon completion, this agreement will allow 90% of food and agricultural exports from Iowa to Japan free of tariffs, and it's set to put our exceptional products back in their rightful position in the Japanese marketplace. If there is one thing that I brought home from Japan, it was optimism. That our trade partnerships are strong, demand is high, and even more opportunity exists to grow markets beyond our borders. Another step in the right direction was the recent announcement that China will allow U.S. poultry back into the country, opening up a critical market for our poultry and egg producers that's been closed since 2015. But when it comes to international markets, two of our largest customers are our neighbors, Canada and Mexico. And the Trump administration successfully negotiated a strong, balanced, and modern trade agreement that brings NAFTA into the 21st century. It's been a year since USMCA was signed by President Trump, and it's long past time for Congress to do the same and ratify it. Every day that goes by is a missed opportunity for families, farmers, small businesses, and manufacturers. And I want to thank Farm Bureau, both here in Iowa and nationally, for keeping the pressure on Congress to get this trade deal done, and it really does help in our trade negotiations with China. So to have the U.S.-Japan and to have USMCA ratified, again, puts more pressure on China for them to get that done. Here at home, Iowa farmers deserve their chance at the unlimited potential of the clean energy future, and together with Iowa Farm Bureau and AFBF, we're fighting for that chance every single day. The value of ethanol and biodiesel to this country have been proven time and time again, reduced dependence on foreign oil, lower prices at the pump, a cleaner burning fuel, a reliable market for corn and soybeans, and good quality jobs throughout rural Iowa and America. As the number one ethanol and biodiesel producer in the country, we will continue to lead the charge in defending the RFS and holding the EPA to the terms of the deal that was negotiated with President Trump in September. From countless phone calls and meetings to testifying to formal letters and to rallying fellow governors, I won't rest, we won't rest until our message is understood, and that is 15 billion gallons means 15 billion gallons, plain and simple. Because it's real people in places like Merrill, Crawfordsville, Emmitsburg, Sioux Center, where biofuels facilities have been shuttered, who live with the decisions that are made in Washington, D.C. And again, I know that many of you here today added your voice and submitted letters to the comment period. So again, thank you. I take great pride, and it is an honor to be part of a coalition that's working tirelessly to protect a robust RFS, to provide producer and blender tax credits, fund the renewable fuel infrastructure program, and hold the administration accountable. But we also need to look for opportunities at the state level to drive domestic demand. And that's why I'm announcing my fifth executive order with you today, which will require that all state vehicles with diesel engines purchased from today forward will support the use of B20 biodiesel. It's my hope that by instituting this executive order in Iowa, it will inspire other governors to consider making biofuels a priority in their states as well. So the executive order, condensed, reads in part, whereas biodiesel production is a growing vital industry in the state of Iowa, essential to the health of agriculture, of the agricultural economy, sustainable environment commitments, and local jobs, and whereas the number of biodiesel retailers in Iowa has increased 231% to 792 since 2010, and the total on-road biodiesel gallons sold has increased 708% to almost 56 million gallons, and whereas Iowa is the nation's leading producer of biodiesel and should also be a leader in ensuring diesel engine manufacturers support biodiesel blends, thereby furthering Iowa's economy, environmental sustainability, and value added to agriculture. Now therefore, I, Kim Reynolds, Governor of the State of Iowa, do hereby order that all State of Iowa executive branch agencies shall ensure that any procurement solicitations, including but not limited to requests for proposals or requests for bids for the vehicles containing diesel engines, shall require the responses to certify the engine manufacturer has provided explicit written support for the use of B20 biodiesel. Signed, December 3rd, 2019. So when I look into the next century, I'm reminded of what Will Rogers once said. The farmer has to be an optimist, or he wouldn't still be a farmer. From weather at home to markets overseas to bureaucratic decisions made in Washington, D.C., so much of Iowa's farmers' success hinges on factors seemingly out of their control. If more than a century of Iowa Farm Bureau has taught us anything, it's that farmers cannot simply sit back and hope someone else fights for our interest. We have to stand together and carry our message loud and clear. People, progress, pride. That's what Iowa Farm Bureau is all about, and that's really what Iowa is all about as well. Everywhere I go, I describe our state as one big small town, and for that, I'm extremely thankful. And that's why we're constantly shining a light on our rural communities through the Empower Rural Iowa initiative that's investing in rural Iowa, connecting rural Iowa, and growing our next generation of leaders. It's because of leaders like every one of you here in this room that I see this new century as one that's full of promise. You're innovative, tenacious, resilient, adaptable, and driven to keep your boots on the ground with your eyes on the horizon. So thank you for the incredible privilege of serving alongside you as the governor of this great state. And thank you for your unwavering support of this beautiful, beautiful place we call home. God bless you, and God bless the great state of Iowa and the United States of America. Thank you.
That again was Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds at the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation Convention. We'll be back on Weekend Ag Matters right after this. Farmers faced a lot of stress during the 2019 growing season, and the holidays can bring about a time of added strain and depression for people who are already feeling overwhelmed. Be on the lookout for those you know in your community who have faced a stressful time. Take time and talk to your neighbors. Go out of your way to make sure they know they are appreciated and cared for. If you're feeling stressed and don't know where to turn, contact the Iowa Helpline at 855-800-1239. A new year is right around the corner, and we here at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network would like you to join us on that journey. Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters, and now, here's Ken Root.
In early December of the year 2000, I was feeling the loss of my father, who had died earlier that year at age 92. Today, as then, I catch myself thinking of him when I see things that remind me of my childhood years on the farm. He was born in 1907, before Oklahoma became a state. His parents were eager to go to Oklahoma Territory to find work and had to wait until he was a month old and able to travel before they loaded their possessions in a wagon and drove from Coffeyville on the Kansas border to Cushing in the north-central part of the state. My mother and father married in 1929 and farmed in Oklahoma through the Depression. It is important to know this because all else in their adult behavior was based on the Depression-era experiences. Christmas at our house was a lot of fun, looking back, but our possessions in the 1950s were still pretty meager. They were paying for a 160-acre farm that was mostly brush and washed-away hills. The good part was that we were in the same shape as our neighbors, so it was normal and quite acceptable to be poor. My parents were well qualified in the area of being conservative. They made sure that no money was spent frivolously for anything, like buying a Christmas tree when we could cut down our own. In the brush country of central Oklahoma, there's only one tree that's green in the winter. It is the flat-leafed eastern red cedar that spreads rapidly if it doesn't have competition. In the days before pesticides that would kill brush, the cedar was choked out by blackjack oak trees, except for a few places where it could gain a foothold. It had to face another challenge: cattle with parasites looking for a place to scratch. On our farm, there literally was no cedar tree that hadn't been broken down by the bull or a cow in need of relief that the rough branches could bring. My father would begin looking for a Christmas tree in late fall, as soon as the deciduous trees had dropped their leaves. He would size up the best cedars on the farm and cut the tree on the day after Thanksgiving. Home he would come, carrying or hauling it, depending on the size. He had a small oak stand that he made years before, and he would put one long nail through the base and into the trunk to stabilize it. Some years, that tree was pretty shabby. It might only have one side that was presentable and a thin top. Nevertheless, we brought it inside with the ceremony of a Macy's parade. At this point, my father's job was done. I never saw him put a single ornament on a tree. That was work for women and children. My sister, 10 years older than me, would make strings of popcorn. Mom would go to her closely guarded possessions trunk and bring out the ornaments and tinsel that she used year after year. There was one special decoration that we put on every year. It was a set of 12 bubble lights that gave off the most delightful glow and mystically boiled after just a few minutes of being plugged in. I would lie back and look at them for hours as I tried to imagine what was in the packages she would wrap and put on the floor. We had to hear the annual warning about the Christmas tree catching fire. The admonition was based on the story of a church that had put candles on their tree, and it caught fire during a children's program. The people made a dash for the doors that opened inward, and many were killed in the panic by the smoke and fire. After we'd heard the story for about the 10th time, we would put the last of the tinsel on the tree and stand back and look at the creation we had made. In my married life, we would go to a Boy Scout lot or to a cut-your-own farm and pay about $5 a foot for a pine tree that was round and full. I told a Christmas tree farmer about our shabby trees of my youth, and he returned the story, saying that one family had toured all his trees and come back with a small, broken little cedar that was growing wild on the edge of his woodlot. When they asked how much it was, he told them it was free. He said they headed home with greater joy than those who had paid $100. I guess that's where I'll leave it. It is not what you pay for Christmas that makes it meaningful. It is the effort you put into it that becomes the memory that lingers and waits to be triggered by events of the next holiday season. Happy holidays, everyone. Merry Christmas. Get out there and make some memories. I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken, and that's all for this edition of Weekend Ag Matters. We thank you for tuning in with us here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You can find replays of this show as well as all of our other content online at iowaagnet.com. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Facebook at Iowa Ag Radio. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on Weekend Ag Matters.